Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Wilmington Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello. Welcome back to Wilmington Business Radio. This is Ann Revell-Petcher. I'm your host. And we have in the studio today three guests that are really impacting our region in a big way. Two of these businesses are really making your business more efficient, more effective every single day. And the third is a nonprofit that is making life better for a whole lot of people. I want to start by introducing Judy Clark with the Autism Support and Programs out of Rocky Point. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
I'm so glad to be here.
I'm so glad you could come. We also have Dan Marks with us. He is the owner of Commercial Site Control, which is a commercial building and energy management company. Hey.
Hello. How are you? Thank you for inviting me in.
Good. I'm glad you're finally here.
Thank you.
And Spence Hackney, Proclaim Interactive. Tell us a little bit about Proclaim Interactive, Spence.
We're a web design and marketing company. And so we started way back when in 2000. Like most people, building these newfangled things called websites.
Website things.
Nobody had ever heard of before.
Right.
And now we've grown into this sort of multi-mode, you know, we do video and photography and write content and pull all the things together it takes to market and succeed on the web today.
So you're a full-blown digital marketing agency.
That's the right term.
Full-blown.
Heard this before. Yeah, that's a technical term. Yeah.
We're going to start with special sound effects here on Business Radio X. So, tell, obviously, this is something near and dear to my heart. Tell everybody listening why they want an interactive agency taking care of them these days.
Oh, that's a great question. Today, there's lots of tools to create your website. And so you can create a WordPress blog. You might have heard that. And you can get a hold of a lot of the social networking tools you need to succeed. But it's tough to make them all work together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're running into. And so one thing an agency brings to the table is the experience and ability to pull all the tools available together to make them actually work. Because what we've seen in the past is a lot of people spend a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of staff hours trying to do this stuff and spinning the wheels, and it never goes very far. And so that's one of the reasons we can pull everything together, and we've got the skills to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason, quite frankly, is just time. I mean, what's it worth to have one of your staff person with another 20 hours a week because somebody else is managing their Facebook feed or somebody else is updating your website or
yeah.
somebody else is dealing with these kind of day-to-day tasks?
Well, and you guys are thinking about this stuff as a whole.
Oh, yeah.
Which
yeah.
most people don't do. You know, they think about, oh, what's our social media presence like right now? They don't think about how that interfaces with their website and maybe their mobile device. I mean, we went over to watch the football game today. And,
oh,
and
so
I was,
sad.
I know. It's so frustrating.
I don't want to go back to the office because the guys are going to be all depressed and won't talk to each other. So I might stay here all day.
Okay, that'd be fine. We've got lots of time. So I was just sitting there kind of tweeting away on my phone and thinking about how that was going to interface with, okay, so that was my personal Twitter feed,
yeah.
but I do a lot of corporate stuff with my personal Twitter feed, but we have a Business Radio X Twitter feed here. Mm-hmm. We have one in our Raleigh studio. We have all of these different feeds, and how should they be coming together? I know they don't live on our website. Do we need to think about that, about where our social media exists?
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to give a shout out to Shelley in our office who thinks about this about 24 hours a day, I think. Because today we've got all these streams. You know, you're
right.
posting pictures on Instagram and, you know, these short Vine videos, maybe Twitter, Facebook. You've got multiple of these accounts probably. And trying to bring them all together and decide strategically what we need to be talking about in order to drive some goal.
Right.
Because a lot of people approach this with really no goal in mind. I just know I need to do it.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit like planting a field without deciding what you're going to plant before you go at it. Mm. And so it takes somebody really thinking strategically about which channels will we use to accomplish the goal that we're after. And that's probably different than what you're doing when you're posting your kids' pictures on Facebook of them eating a
Most
cake
likely.
Or whatever it is.
Sure. Well, it's interesting because you have to think about how your audience is really using all of these different sets of media, right?
Sure.
So companies who still have – they may have a great website, but then I try to look at it on my – I was just shopping for a car a little while ago. I got to tell you what a frustrating experience that was because I'm searching – on the web, and then I'm at a dealer, and I'm thinking, well, maybe how does that compare to this other car that I'm thinking of? I'm trying to look at it on my phone, and they're all designed for a screen that's 17 inches or something, not for my mobile device. What are you seeing in terms of people designing for mobile?
We decided this year to design for mobile first before
really?
We do desktop. What we're seeing, especially in the Raleigh market's a little bit ahead of us, in Atlanta and Dallas and a few other bigger markets we work in, but not too far. We're seeing a lot of businesses are over half of their usage is coming from mobile on their websites. And so if you're doing something where you're targeting a 25-year-old female, you're going to see 60 to 70% mobile usage.
Uh-huh.
And so if your site is not a joy to interact with on a mobile device,
right.
you've lost that person already. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go until they find somebody whose site is a joy to work with. So what we're seeing is just the act of developing a mobile-friendly version of your site is going to increase your engagement maybe 25, 30% right off the bat because people aren't going to bounce off. You know, they're going to come and stay and do what they need to do instead
sure.
of bumping it and then leaving immediately when it's frustrating to work with.
Is this true for e-commerce kind of sites as well?
Absolutely. Well, think about how many times you bought something from Amazon.com on your cell phone. I was in the line at
Almost
Walmart.
Exclusively. Oh!
I probably shouldn't say this, but I was in line at Walmart returning my kid's dart gun, buying a new one at Amazon.com because it was easier than walking to the back of the store and trying to find the one on the shelf.
Yeah.
And cheaper, you know.
Yeah,
and
you
so
bet.
I don't think I'm the only one out there doing that.
No. I mean, there are certain things you want to buy in person. There's
sure.
certain things you want to buy online, but, you know, everybody's using online for something, even if it's just research, right?
Right.
So how impactful, you know, I've been doing marketing media relations my whole life, and we spend a lot of time up front dealing with things like value propositions and unique selling propositions and
yeah.
all these different, what is really special and unique about you? How does that play in the world of digital marketing?
You know, it's a little bit like being a teenager and trying to find yourself. Remember that? Trying to
oh,
figure out who you
yeah.
are. Because until you figure out who you are, you can't decide what you want to do with your life. And I think a lot of businesses we talk to, one of the first things we ask them is, why would somebody do business with you? Or why would somebody want to give money to you as a nonprofit?
Mm-hmm.
Or why would somebody want to come worship with you as a church
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the 17 other churches and the 25 other businesses? And you know, sometimes you get the kind of blank stare looking back, and they'll just say, because we're the best.
Right, of course.
Know? But of course, the best at what? You know, if you're First Fruit Ministry downtown, you want to be the best at helping women get into permanent housing.
Mm.
And that's the ultimate value proposition. You know, we get women in permanent housing. It's four times the success rate of any other homeless ministry in the county, or excuse me, four times the state average, I believe.
Okay.
And so that's your, you know, that's the value you bring to the table about how you do it. And I think it's important today in a very crowded online marketplace that we know that.
Yeah.
Because it's not enough to be a landscaper and go out there and say, well, I landscape. Or
yeah.
to be a general contractor and say, well, I'm a general contractor. Because everybody out there is a general contractor. And I can locate them all and go and touch them all, look at them all in about 10 minutes
mm-hmm.
on my phone.
Right.
And so it's more important than ever to know what makes you special. What's that unique value proposition in the market?
So once people figure this out, how do you then help them, if you will, excuse the pun, proclaim their value proposition?
That was a very good pun. That's the correct pun. Yeah.
How do you help them actually tell their story to the world?
Okay. Well, our key word is really amplify.
Okay.
And we around the office, we talk about that we really can't amplify a bad message. You can. Not a good idea. and you can't amplify what you don't know about, what you can't define. And so once we've defined this ultimate value proposition, what we've defined what makes you special, we define what makes your brand,
okay.
Our job is to amplify that to as many potential users, donors, prospects, clients as possible. And so it's dependent. That's why it's so important. We know who you are. We know what's important about you. We know what's unique and powerful and translates in the community because that's what we're going to make louder. And we're going to do that through social media and mobile and web and pay-per-click, and all the other tools that we have available.
So of all of these tools, which drive us all crazy because there are so darn many of them, and it's really hard to manage
And a new one happened while we're on the show right now. A new one was birthed right
now. No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Sure.
Which ones are here to stay? Which ones do I have to do versus the ones that are nice to do?
That's a great question. Because you've got to cut something.
You got to. You don't have time for it.
You can't do everything. You know, of course, I don't think Google's going anywhere.
Probably
and
not
so,
anytime soon.
You know, it is now the phone book, and it's how we find stuff. And so you have to deal with that. Another one, a lot of business owners are real quick to dismiss the whole social media concept.
Mm.
The reality is social media has been going on for 2,000 years. You know, I imagine in the Bible times when somebody said, where's a good place to eat? You know, they asked, their buddy, and he referred them down the path here. That's really what's happening on Facebook. Is, the mom saying, what's a good doctor to visit? Mm-hmm. And she's getting some referrals from her friend.
Sure.
Or, we saw a manatee at our dock, and I thought it was the weirdest thing ever. Here at our dock.
Isn't that a little north?
That's what I thought. But I put it on Facebook, and I had 14 people in 10 minutes telling me, no, that's no big deal.
Really?
And that used to happen by walking down the road and saying, hey, have you ever seen a manatee before? Yeah, now we do it on Facebook. And so to say I'm not going to talk to people in this way, you're really saying I'm not going to speak to anybody when they walk past me on the street anymore.
Right.
And so I think you don't have the choice really of not participating in social media, because that's where the conversation is going on now. So if you choose not to participate, it's sort of like shutting off your, half your audience there and refusing to speak to them.
Well, social media especially, we found in the public relations side of our business that social media is so critical in terms of reputation management.
Yes.
You can't ignore it. You mm-hmm. can't just say, well, I don't think that I want to tweet because it's silly. Well, you better be watching what people are saying about you. Is that something that you guys address as well?
It is. You probably all bought some electronic device, and you've gone to Amazon or Newegg or wherever you like to buy your stuff, and you look at the star ratings, and I'm too lazy to figure out what it's really like, so I just buy the one with the 5-star rating, right? Because it's so much quicker than digging into the tech stuff. We're starting to do that now with doctors, and we're doing it with restaurants a bit. When you travel, we were in the Outer Banks and trying to find somewhere to eat, and we found the pizza place that had the best star rating.
Yep.
Because we don't know any better, and people are becoming more and more dependent on that.
Sure.
So it's becoming critical. We kind of watch what people are saying about us and what star rating we're giving. And I know it's frustrating when you get that bad review, but you've got to do something to flood it with positives.
Yep,
if you end up with a 2 out of 5-star rating out there, I understand it might not be fair, but we just need to fix it because they are making a difference today. Yeah.
You mentioned Google earlier. And, some people think of Google just as a search engine. And of course, Google is a little bit more than a search engine these days. In fact, they're doing amazingly interesting things. I know that there's a new program where they're doing internal photography. So instead of just the drive-by and the maps, you can actually have the inside of your building done.
Yeah.
That's very cool and can make a big difference. What other kinds of things do you advise people about in terms of either pay-per-click or interesting things that they can do in terms of Google?
There's a couple quick hits we always like to talk about on Google. Things that are going to help you out immediately. One of those is pay-per-click, of course. You can, quite frankly, buy visits to your website that are qualified.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come to us and we had a guy that was selling a supplemental health care insurance for senior adults. And so we had this window to sell at Journopal and open enrollment. And if you need the quick influx of traffic, pay-per-click is a pretty tried and true way of getting it. And we can we know quickly if it's successful or not.
Yeah.
And then you can just sort of ramp it up. So that's a quick hit. The other one, especially for a local business, are these Google, it's called Google Business Photography now.
They
just kind of rebranded it.
Right.
And it allows a patron to see inside your business. And Google's really pushing people towards, if you find a business on your mobile device, it's probably going to put it right in your face. If you find them on Google Maps, I don't know if you saw Google release a TV today. I imagine it's probably going to be right on the front screen of your TV. And we're finding that people that have these virtual tours are higher up in the search results, frankly.
Is that right?
And so the more fleshed out, it's called your knowledge graph, the more information Google has about your business, the better they're going to rank you.
Gotcha.
And that's just one more data point they have about your business.
Right.
And so that's another fairly inexpensive, kind of quick hit way we can improve our chances of being found in Google.
That's cool. That's very cool. So you guys spend an awful lot of time sitting in your offices worrying about social media and doing graphic design and creating people's presence online and interactively. When you're not doing that, you're out doing a lot of really interesting things. Share with us, you spoke real briefly about First Ministry?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
It was founded, about 14, 15 years ago, I think, by Rick Stugger. And it is a homeless ministry of the poor and homeless. Do a couple things, and we do them really well. And this is why I chose to be involved with them. One is they provide permanent transition for women to go off the street. These are women who have been in the sex trades, drug addicted, mental health issues. and have ended up with nothing. Mm-hmm. And through a year or two program, depending on how it goes, these women end up with jobs to sustain themselves, some sort of education, housing they can't afford, and the life skills to hang on to it.
Yeah.
So it's not a Band-Aid. That's what I like so much about it. And there is no better investment of your donation dollar in all three counties. And of course, we got somebody sitting across the table who there's a very specific need there we need to fulfill. But if you want to end the homelessness poverty, this is the permanent solution to it. Mm-hmm. And of course, they also street feeds. They go on the street and just, if you're hungry, they feed you, take care of, you know, widows and orphans and all the sort of disenfranchised people. They really turn that Longleaf Park area of town around over on Vance Street. So
they have a flip side solution for men?
They do. It's just starting. We call it the mentoring program right now. There's three men in it. And so it's much smaller than the women's program. So we're just getting it off the ground.
Cool.
And so we, you know, that's one of the things that's on our sort of five-year plan is to get that in place like we have it for the women's program.
Thanks so much for doing that.
We love it.
That's great. Hang on for just a second. We're going to come back and chat with you for just a minute, but we want to scoot over for a second. I have a conversation with Dan Marks. Dan.
Yes.
You know, when I first met you and you told me what you did, I said, that is so cool. We need more of this.
Yeah.
So tell me, just tell the entire audience a little bit more about commercial site control.
Right. Well, commercial site control provides a low-cost building automation systems. And this is utilizing latest technology to allow business owners, small to medium business owners, to get an insight to their businesses, especially if they have multiple sites. This could be franchise restaurant owners, franchise furniture stores, somebody.
So these are small to medium-sized businesses that own their own building. Is that true?
Yeah, it can be either, but it depends on how it's interacted and how their leasing arrangement's set up versus owning it.
I see.
A lot of times the business owner will own their own building because of if they're in it for the long haul, it makes more sense, and that's part of the arrangement. Frequently, if you're a franchise restaurant or such, the cost, because they have a fit and format, it will be you're going to end up owning the building. So it kind of comes with the territory. But usually, they will this is not a market that's been addressed, but it allows them to see get a quick status through the web. Through a web portal, they have a dashboard. You can log in. You can see all your sites on a tile. You can drill down, see how the system.
So the objective is to do what?
Oh, the objective is really to facilitate more control for them because sometimes if you have one business and you're always there, there's some limited benefits, but there are several benefits to doing this. But we do know business owners with you know, dozens and dozens of restaurants or stores. Especially if they're chain, where the executives are nowhere near where the businesses are. They have to rely on local, you know, store managers or management there. And frankly, nobody cares about your money like you do. And so if you can control anything you know, more efficiently, then you're going to be running a tighter ship. And you're going to be reducing waste, reducing costs, things like that.
And what you're trying to control really is the way that energy is used in your buildings. Is that true?
Yeah, it's more than energy, frankly. All the systems, and we're talking about systems such as the air conditioning, especially multiple zone air conditioning, lighting, refrigeration, really common in hospitals or in restaurants. They have walk-in coolers, freezers, et cetera. They use a lot of power. But it's more than just simply the power and the energy savings because realistically, this equipment is expensive. And so I think everybody can understand that the better you maintain any of your expensive capital equipment, like your car, you do preventative maintenance, things like that, the better off and the more efficient it will be, the higher resale value, the longer it lasts. However, there's sort of a limit on how much you want to go and take that thing in and how much, you know, interaction you want to have with it. Most of us, you know, the check engine light's on in the car and you still don't do much about it. But that's the reason why those sort of controls are there. So the point of doing this is, yes, if you run anything more efficiently, it will save energy. But that's not really even the half of it. if you run it more efficiently and you set up alarms and diagnostics, which is probably more important, you preemptively are aware of alarms coming to you of a system that's starting to degrade, and you can have alarms sent to your email or your text. You have a service text.
So you're less likely to have it go down.
Exactly. Less likely to go down, or at least, and what you're doing is avoiding catastrophic failure for what could be a preventative service call. And frequently what happens with that is, especially if you have diagnostics, you just dispatch your local tech that you always use, and they can come with the parts. They'll know, give a good idea, and you could give them a login so that they can look at the condition and do some diagnostics. It gives you a head start rather than all your restaurant's hot, that you get an emergency call. The guy comes the next day, then he tells you it's a 4-day lead time because you blew the compressor. Yes, things
right, exactly. So, well, give us can you tell us a story? Give us a story about someone who has utilized your system, or a way that they could have utilized your system.
Yeah, frequently one of the things that we noticed, and you know, coming from Silicon Valley where a lot of technology is used all the time, this isn't necessarily as much of a big deal, although, you know, we see that coming right now, lots of that activity now. But for example, we had a customer in the past who didn't really believe the alarms, and they ran a chain of fast food stores.
Okay.
Because they frankly didn't, I don't know, for whatever reason, believe it, because they saw the alarm was down. It gave a predictive alarm. And so what happens frequently is, well, the system's still running, but the system isn't running as effective as it should have been. And when you have analytics, which we are cloud-based analytics, so we have a gateway through the internet, it sends back through a secure web service to a server that does processing in the background. It's able to do analysis that a local small processor couldn't do, but over a course of time, we'll be able to predict that, hey, that particular unit isn't running as well as it used to.
So he's looking at a unit that's what, some sort of a refrigeration unit?
That was an air conditioner
in
this case.
Unit.
Air conditioners break a lot, frankly.
And they do a hard job.
Yeah. So, and it's not because they have to. It's because most of the time we do the basic preventative maintenance. You know, you have somebody change the filters. You maybe every few months you have somebody check the refrigerant, clean out the coil, stuff like that.
Okay.
However, the specs on those from the factory are fairly wide. It doesn't mean that particular unit isn't degrading, even if it has what within spec refrigerant levels.
Sure.
What happens though frequently?
It's like your PC.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Your PC is getting a little slower, but you know, yeah, everybody says, "Oh yeah, no, that's fine."
It's fine. Yeah, it's difference between, you know, 20 and 50. Well, that's a big range, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So the point is, the tech may even not notice it, but the computer will notice it, that it is not running as well as it should for those existing conditions, and send you it says preemptive, it's a predictive alarm. If you choose to ignore it, then, which I've seen, usually they, or what's happened is they'll ignore the first time, and then when it breaks, it's like, well, it's not like you didn't get warned.
Yeah, right.
The problem with expensive capital equipment, kind of like your car, you know, recently have, you know, had
check engine.
Yeah, check engine, and then the engine blows
I'm
up.
Ignoring,
you know,
check engine.
The light was on for, you know, 100 miles, and now it's dead. Well, same thing goes there. You know, rooftop units for commercial applications are much more expensive than your home unit, and so you blow one of the stages of compressors, it's a several $1,000 situation.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you've lost customers because they're uncomfortable.
You bet.
You've got and capital equipment lifespan, utilizing it for as long as possible is really important, because that's actually more of the cost. It not only does it save energy if it's running at highest efficiency, but you're extending the lifespan of a unit that could easily degrade and crash, you know,
sure,
a set of time.
But you get kind of you give a little heads up to different businesses too about other things that are happening that are inefficient. Like, I think you told me a story once about a fast food restaurant. I think we were sitting in a fast food restaurant at the time, or a coffee shop or something,
right,
where you actually were able to help owners who were obviously not on site at the time notice that every time a food shipment would come the back door would get propped open,
right,
the refrigerator right. would get propped open, and you've got all this nice cold air going straight out that 95-degree day in the back door.
Right. Well, that's one of the things about the graphing, and that's where, frankly, especially for restaurants, you really should have at least refrigeration monitoring if you don't do the control or the diagnostics. Monitoring just basically tells you what's going on. If you are running a restaurant, you know, casual dining or fast food, frequently you have workers in there that aren't really bought into it. They're not being paid a lot. They're, you know, they will get a little bit lazy. Mm-hmm. And these walk-in coolers can be propped open with the door, throw the plastic things back, and you walk in and out of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, FDA, a health inspector can walk in at any time and ask for 6 months' worth of temperature records in the cooler, which traditionally has been a clipboard hanging on the wall. People can write down anything. In this case, you have a graph that's updated every 3 minutes. And what that means is for the business owner, you leave that door open. Not only are you wasting energy, of course, because you're now heating up or cooling down the kitchen, but really heating up the food. The food gets warm. You could have a potential liability, mm-hmm. especially if it's a raw food like chicken. And this is particularly concerned if you're a chicken place like Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Sure. Right.
Then if so, you could get a citation. You could get a bad health rating. You could get somebody sick. You could get a lawsuit. You could get shut down. So the escalation could be very bad for a very simple and common situation. So the food inventory at a restaurant, in this particular case, is something that, you know, that's their livelihood.
Yeah.
They do not want to be losing food
yeah.
over a simple thing such as making sure that the door is closed and the alarms are going. One particular multiple franchise business owner changed that once he saw the graphs of the alarms going off, you know, just before lunch prep and dinner prep, that he bought food grade carts, gave everybody a coat, made them walk in and lock themselves in the cooler, prep it all in the cart and carry it back out rather than carry the food out one by one with the door open.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Not only did he save energy, he reduced his liability. He prolonged his food life, reduced his, you know, risk, et cetera. So those are the kind of things that happen that aren't just about saving energy.
You hired a whole bunch of menopausal women who really wanted to stand in the fridge.
Well. Yeah.
They were all lining up at the door for that job.
Exactly. I should have thought of that one. So yeah, there's a lot of reasons for doing these sort of systems.
So tell us a little bit about your customers. So we've talked a little bit about the food industry.
Mm-hmm,
you have customers that are in the that own auto dealerships. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. So we've had there's a different profile for different customers, but they're usually own multiple sites.
Okay.
So the main owner isn't there. They could be using a lot of energy. Auto dealerships are a particular one that they burn a lot of electricity in the form of parking lot lights because they light up those things like crazy, which is part of the reason why we offer partnerships with low energy use LEDs. LEDs are really the way to go because they have a truer light, shows off the colors. We try to say that also for furniture stores, incredible amount of energy used for lighting. And those outdoor lights, they're called high-intensity discharge lights that you see in the parking lot, frequently 800 to 1,000 watts a piece, and they'll have dozens of them. So you're talking about, you know, tens of thousands of watts potentially that they're running all the time, which can be reduced incredibly, you know, up to 80%. And then,
that's a good number.
So yeah, it's a big number. And one of the other issues about that is most, and actually, if you push them all, utilities have a rebate program to help defer the cost because those are government-funded rebates. So we can also help with that sort of thing to help them with those rebates. If you put in a full business automation system, you can get custom rebates. But again, the issue is not just about energy efficiency. It's about control. It's about running your business more effectively, things like that.
So it's a double win.
Double win, right.
That's cool.
So,
well, you work with a lot of different kinds of businesses in the area, and you've also had some really interesting connections made for you since you got into Wilmington, one of which I believe is with an autism charity. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, thanks. A few months ago, actually, I got more acutely aware of this disability through a relationship with one of our dealers, Paul Clark of the Clark Group. Clark Group has provided environmental services here in the southeastern North Carolina area for 25 years or so. So it was a natural expansion for Paul to offer more environmentally friendly products and services. What I did find out after getting to know Paul more is that his two sons were severely autistic, and they reside full-time at the ASAP Cares Rainbow House, but one of the facilities of the Autism Support and Programs, which is right in Rocky Point. It's run by Dina Holmes and Judy Clark, and Judy's the boy's mother. One thing about that we realize is that, you know, it's a nonprofit, so they're always in need of additional funds to keep them running. We had put some air conditioning controls in just to help them out with remote access, because they're kind of there all the time and having to do a lot of work all the time. But one of the things that we wanted to do, you know, we wanted to do more than that. So we're hoping to raise awareness in the business community about this disability, because I think that one of the challenges is that business owners who have, you know, they've worked hard, they've had the mental and physical capabilities of becoming successful, driving a business. The residents here who have struggled with this disability will probably never have that chance. So it's not something that, frankly, I was ever aware of. I didn't understand the scope and the magnitude of this disability. And so that's why we're creating a campaign. We've created a campaign to donate a percentage of revenue to the ASAP Cares nonprofit organization.
Thank you for doing that.
Well, yes, it's a way to give back to the community. And then one of the other things that we would like to be able to do is, as more of the business owners who are aware of our product come in, they can basically kind of do good as they do well for themselves, mm-hmm. both eco-friendly and from a business efficiency and cash flow perspective. Right. So it's a double win there, too.
Right, absolutely. So, well, thank you for actually bringing Judy Clark into the studio with you. I appreciate that. Judy, tell us a little bit about Autism Support and Programs, ASAP, and how you got involved in this and how you decided this was a necessary function.
Well, as a mom of two boys who have autism, that's my passion. That's, you know, that's my life.
Consumes your life.
It does. And
what is essentially, what is ASAP? Is it a physical, it's obviously a physical location?
ASAP initially was a summer autism program.
Oh.
So when my boys were both young, there was nothing for them to do. They didn't have a whole lot of friends. They didn't have, they couldn't go on sports teams. They didn't go on overnight visits.
Big summer camps or?
Well, we do have a summer camp. The Autism Society in North Carolina operates a wonderful summer camp and one in Black Mountain. But, you know, just for day-to-day things. So my now ex-husband, Paul Clark, that he was referring to, and I decided to renovate our garage, and we set up a classroom space in there for our sons, and, you know, just to teach them and have them, you know, be interacting with we had shelves built all over and, you know, bins and just very organized and what they need, structure and organization. And eventually people started learning about it, and they wanted to come into our home and get services there. So we did that for a while, and then it was getting overwhelming.
Yeah. Is there a large autism community here?
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
So you moved from your home out to Rocky Point?
We moved from our home to a church that allowed us space, St. Paul's Episcopal Church, and then from there to the New Hanover County School System. So they allowed us space for four classrooms, and we had like 26 kids.
And so was it still a summer program at this point?
During the summer, that's mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm. And now it's a year-round program.
Well, now the summer program no longer exists.
Okay.
My oldest son, Remley, he was in a special program at the Murdoch Center in Butner, North Carolina. And it was time for him to get out of there and come back to his home community. So I developed a program for him so that he could get back home. Initially, there was just him in the home.
Okay.
And we did that for a real good reason, and that was because he was very severely affected, and he could cause damage, a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. And so we had three staff for just Remley.
Oh, my goodness.
Initially, and he has made so much progress. It's just incredible. He's my miracle child.
And so a lot of people don't know a lot about autism. They think they do because they see someone with autism and they look different or they act different, and they don't know what it's about. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about autism and the range of how it affects people.
Yeah, there's a huge range. It's you can have somebody who's so mildly affected that you wouldn't even know. You might not even know that they had an issue about autism, but mm-hmm. they have that diagnosis, and it is real. And it goes all the way up to, like, my son that I was talking about, where he actually was in a straitjacket.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, where he and this was for his own good. He wanted it. He needed that pressure. A lot of people with autism need stimulation, and so that helped give him that pressure. Today, he doesn't have any of that. He doesn't have to be in that jacket anymore. He's made lots of progress. But people in general, you know, they're, it's unfortunate when, we can't accept people for who they are, because these people are beautiful people. They are wonderful, wonderful people, and they have a lot of skills, and they can offer a lot.
Yeah. So tell us about how the program works right now. You've got obviously more than one person out at ASAP.
Yeah. So now ASAP is called Autism Support and Programs. Mm-hmm. We kept the acronym. And we actually have two group homes.
Oh.
And a day program. And we're on 15 acres. We have horses and ponies and chickens and lots of stuff for the guys to do. And it's just, it's wonderful.
And how many, you have all men there?
As far as the residents go, they're just men.
Mm-hmm.
But we have people who come from the community,
okay.
and they participate in our programs as well.
And what ranges of age are
these we people? Accept any age over three, but right now our youngest is in first grade.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What's your goal for these residents?
You know, we used to think independence, but we're kind of changing gears, mm-hmm. and really looking at them being able to be the best that they individually can be. And we really try to support people by not doing for them, but doing with them.
Well, that's great.
You know, because they need to learn,
right.
and it's important, and their self-esteem goes through the roof
when they do for themselves.
Yes,
absolutely. So the parents, the families of these not just kids, as these adults, mm-hmm. right, at many times, they don't all come from very wealthy families, and I would assume that a lot of these kids really require 24/7 care.
We have 24-hour round-the-clock awake staff.
And this is not inexpensive.
No, no, it's not.
Tell us how people who are touched by this can help you.
Well, if we, you know, donations are always accepted.
Okay.
And we have people who come out and help us on the farm.
Well, that's good.
You know, they work, they're with the guys too, mm-hmm. and they help them brush the horses. And but there's a lot of legalities too that go along with it.
Sure.
So it's a
So one of the best ways to help would be when you're looking at your annual giving at home is to take a look at how you could help.
Oh, absolutely.
With ASAP.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Tell us how somebody, do you have a website for this, or how do people get in touch with you?
No, but we're getting ready to.
It looks like Proclaim Interactive is going to be very busy.
Yeah. I was, as you were talking, I was like, that is something that we definitely need.
Right.
And we've had one, but it's down right now, and we can't figure out what we need to do with it. So
you have an email address that people could contact you with?
Yeah. My email address is asapcares@bellsouth.net.
So that's asapcares@bellsouth.net.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
So, gentlemen and lady, I want to thank you for your time in the studio today. This has been really insightful. I've learned an awful lot, and I'm sure everybody has. Dan, wouldn't you tell us how people can get in touch with you if they are interested in getting a little bit more control over their physical space?
Thanks for the fun, Ann. www.commercialsitecontrol.com. Click the info button on the contact us. That's kind of the most direct way. Or you can call 910-317-0750. And to Spence's point, I have to confess, even coming from the Silicon Valley, I sort of minimized all the Twitter and the LinkedIn and the Facebook. So I'm going to have a conversation with him afterwards on that as well.
Oh, man. Cha-ching.
That's a good thing.
That's great. That's fabulous. Okay, Spence, how do people get in touch with Proclaim Interactive if they need to start proclaiming?
Yeah, it's proclaiminteractive.com.
Well, that's not difficult, is it?
Not too hard. And our phone number is 910-795-4143.
Excellent.
Of course, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff.
All that
we
stuff.
We actually do. So we can try that as well.
And you can listen to this show again on our podcast at wilmington.businessradiox.com. And until next week, this is Ann Revel-Petcher signing off for Wilmington Business Radio.